You're listening to the Flying Goat Farm podcast with your host, Lisa Check. This podcast is for people who love yarn and fiber and sheep, who love to knit and crochet and maybe even felt. We will be talking about the crossroads between keeping sheep and goats, making yarn, and expressing your colorful self.
Hi, and welcome to the Flying Goat Farm podcast with me, Lisa Check. Here's what's happening on the farm. We are definitely now into fall. Things are getting cooler, and we're starting to pull out our woolen sweaters and thinking about sitting by the fire and knitting something warm. So you can listen to this podcast, hopefully, while you are knitting or making something great. Today, I'm talking to Roan Farnham. He is a member of the Chesapeake Fiber Shed Sustainable Cloth Community. We talked about the Sustainable Cloth Challenge and all the learning that he's done to go from fleece to sweater and what it really takes to make a local textile in this day and age, and the challenges of that we face in order to build our sustainable wardrobe. So I hope you enjoy listening, and here we go. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. Just got back from work.
Are you working from home now?
No, I just started working at a bookstore.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's neat.
Pretty chill.
Yeah. Is it a big chain or is it a small, like, independent bookstore?
It's a bigger one. It's Second and Charles. It's sort of like I don't know if they have stores everywhere, but they're connected to Books A Million. So.
Okay. That's fun. It would be dangerous for me to have that job.
Yeah. They're like, please don't spend all your paycheck on this store. Please take some home with you.
Yeah. Keep me away from those things.
Yeah.
Well, for this season, we've been talking about fiber shed and like fast fashion and slow fashion and all that. And so I'm asking people, like, how did they get their start? What's their creative journey been like? Like, when did you start being a maker and how did you start making stuff?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I've always been very creative, but before it was more of like writing and visual art or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then I don't even know if I can like say exactly what got me into fiber stuff. It was gradual, but it started with natural dyeing. I just like found out about that was a thing that you could make dyes from plants. And I was like, whoa, that's the coolest thing ever. And then I think it kind of led to like, oh, well, wool is really good for naturally dyeing. Like it takes the dye a lot better than cotton, which is more common to like have a cotton shirt or something like that. So I was like, okay, well, I got some wool yarn. And then I learned how to dye that. And then I was like, well, I got to do something with this yarn. And I really do think that that was why I started to learn how to knit and then do other things with yarn and all that.
So it was kind of like a slippery slope. You know, you put in one toe into the dyeing world, and then it's like a big chain that you've had to like, and now you're spinning your own yarn. And
yes, that is a good way to say it. Slippery slope. Because I know there are some people that are like knitters and like they just knit a ton, and maybe they do like crochet or something too, but then they like focus on one craft at a time. But then there seems to be also a large portion of people that are like, ooh, I can't out myself. I'm just going to learn everything.
Exactly. Because didn't you get a loom too recently?
I did. Yes.
Yes.
I've tried them all. I'm going into hide tanning now. I just want to try everything.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yes. That's my like next one that I'm going to jump into once I have maybe finished like our fiber shed project.
Well, that's really cool. I know that there's a farm that they show at the Montpelier show, and they do smoke tanning. Somehow they're using smoke or fire or something like that. So yeah, really.
Yeah, that's one of, I don't know a ton about it, but that's like one of the ways that you can tan hides naturally, like without the harsh chemicals that they use nowadays.
Yeah, well, that's really cool. So how did you find out about the fiber shed in general, or the Chesapeake fiber shed in particular?
Yeah, I think like a lot of people, I read the fiber shed book, the Rebecca Burgess's book. I guess I'd been like looking into them before the book came out, and then I was working at another bookstore and the book came out, and so I got it. And I think I probably like looked at the directory in the back and was like, oh, that's the one near me, the Chesapeake fiber shed. And then I'm like, maybe I was part of your mailing list or something. I don't remember exactly when I heard about the sustainable cloth challenge, but that's, you know, when you're doing your introductory meeting about that, I joined for that.
Yeah.
It sounded like a cool thing to do.
And you really, for that challenge, you're starting from the raw fleece and taking it all the way. I mean, that's commendable.
Yeah. I think we were just talking about this recently about how I'm not 100% sure that I'm going to be able to make a sweater, like a finished garment, by our end date of our challenge, but that might be okay, because really what I've used this challenge, this like year-long challenge, to do is like learn the, you know, beginning to end process, where I kind of already knew the end part of the knitting, but I'd never done, well, I'd done a tiny bit of spinning, but never a ton of spinning, and never from fleece. So I learned how to process fleece, I learned how to buy fleece, So it really filled in a lot of the gaps in my knowledge. And it was a good like prompt or challenge to learn all that during this year, because, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I'll learn a bit here, learn a bit there. But it's nice to be like, I'm going to learn this whole thing for this reason.
You had a definite deadline and you kept at it, which was good. And yeah, I think if Shave 'em to Save 'em says that you can, that a skein of yarn is an end product, then I think that sustainable cloth can say the same thing.
Sure. You're making tiny pieces of, no, you're making like the thing that will turn into the larger thing. Yeah. Especially because I'm going to dye it too. So.
Yeah. And we're going to probably, you know, we're going to be doing this next year too. So, you know, this can be just the next step in the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. Why is fiber shed important to you? Or when you were reading the book, did something strike you? Like, I know for me, some of the things I knew that were in the book, but some things were like horrifying that I had no clue about.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was like, when I was reading it, I think I was a little like trepidatious going into it, because like some people or people in my generation and things like that, there's like so much talk about climate change and bad environmental practices and like how everything is bad and like it's, everything's messed up. And I was a little like, oh, I don't want to just like read about how everything's bad. But that really was not what the book was. It was more about like, these are the specific problems with the textile industry, and here's how we're planning on changing them for the better. Like, here are some solutions.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really empowering. And yeah, I think that's just what I really like. I've thought about like, why do I like textile stuff? Because that's not like my only interest in life, but I think I've really connected to the sustainability part. Almost primarily that, because, you know, you can work on sustainability and like, you know, like reversing climate change stuff, all of that kind of thing, from a lot of different areas, like food, you know, is the other really big one, and then just like land use and stuff like that. But textiles, I think, is like the art part of it and the individuality part of it is appealing to me, the creativity. But then also just like, it really is such a big contributor to a lot of waste and a lot of like misuse, you know, of materials and exploitation of people. So I think it's like, it just like everything can intersect with textiles. And I find that like really exciting, exciting more than like depressing. So that's why I like it so much.
And there are things that people can do with small steps.
Yeah.
It's really hard to change your whole wardrobe over or your whole buying situation over to slow fashion, but you can do little bits, you know, little steps along the way.
Yeah, I think recently the Fiber Shed group did the like mending challenge, probably to address that kind of thing of like, here's something that anyone can do. Everyone has clothes that have holes in them, you know, or break down over time. And so like, and that's not a small thing to learn how to mend. It's not like a little thing. It's like, hey, if everyone really committed to like not just throwing away clothes once they have one tear in them, that's a big deal.
Right. Or have lost a button. Cause I know a lot of people, when I was teaching that, you know, grown adults would like, I don't know how to sew on a button.
Well, so easy.
Yeah.
But I,
because you have to have tools. Like my, go ahead.
Yes. No, I mean, that's a good point of like, you know, you have to have some knowledge and some tools. And I think I was saying, oh, it's so easy because like my mom, you know, fixed things and her mom hemmed things and fixed things. And we always had a sewing basket and sewing machine. So I'm very familiar with like the small pieces of that. But
so you came from a tradition of
it's the like learning to make your own clothes. Yeah, that's the other step. And I think something that I've learned from like trying to make my own clothes and doing, I think maybe we're having some connection issues, but
but I can still see you. I can still hear you.
Okay, good. I was saying that like doing for me, like trying to make my own clothes has really taught me that it is very hard, even for like me, who's very dedicated to learning it. It's very intimidating and very complicated, and it takes a long time to learn. So, yeah, it's not like a simple thing that you can just be like, oh, you should do this. You know, it's harder than that.
Yeah, and especially when you think about spinning, really, is when you're spinning on a wheel, you know, your hands and your feet are doing something totally different. And it's really hard for people to get that rhythm and not be frustrated by it. It takes a lot of practice to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
Not even to do it well, but just to do it so that you get some yarn, you know?
Although I think, but then it's like, you know, I think people, or not like I think people, but I was kind of surprised at how intuitive spinning was for me.
Oh,
like I tried it first on a drop spindle and I was like, oh, this is kind of like, you know, once you get the motion, it's kind of magical. You're like turning fiber into string and you're like, whoa, it's that easy. You can just twist it and then it becomes string. So I think it's been very intuitive, and you know, there are probably people on both sides that are like, oh, this is really hard, or oh, this is really intuitive, but so many people have never even tried before that they don't know if they would like it or not.
Exactly. Or they think there's no way that I could do it because there's a, you know, there is also that you need to buy tools, or people think that they need to buy tools. And especially like a spinning wheel is no small thing to buy.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, because I kind of like last fall when we were planning our sustainable cloth projects, I was like, I think I kind of want to do like a fleece to sweater project. And so in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, I think I'll probably need like a spinning wheel to make all that yarn. Cause it's, you know, kind of, I thought it would be a lot easier at the time. Now I'm like, you know, you can definitely spin a ton of yarn on a drop spindle, but I think for me, spinning on a wheel is a little bit easier.
Yeah.
I was lucky to get like a really good deal on a secondhand wheel. And cause I don't know that I could have shelled out for like a new one. So I'm glad that I got the one that I have, although it's a Canadian production wheel. So it's a little, it had a learning curve to it.
Yeah. And you said that there are some things that you have to tweak around with it. Right. But that's also good too, cause you begin to understand how the mechanics work and how it will work for you.
Oh yeah. Super. I think spinning wheels are so interesting because I think like when I'm using it, I just can't get over the fact that it's not electric at all. Like it's all human powered.
Yeah.
I think it's because there's like moving parts to it, but it's all coming from your foot. Like that's so cool. And there's
pulley systems and stuff, right? I mean, the bands.
Oh, yeah. Like we have hand tools, but there's not a ton of examples that I could think of in my like day-to-day life of like machines that move that aren't electric, if you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's very cool.
Yeah. And the other thing that I love about textile equipment is it doesn't have to be new. And, mm-hmm. you know, that they last forever and that you can fix them easily most of the time, or you can find pieces if you're missing, you know, you can find a bobbin that will fit even if it isn't from that manufacturer and that kind of stuff. So it's like you don't have to have the newest thing on the block and it still works really well. I love that.
Yeah, this wheel is probably over 100 years old, which is so interesting. So yeah. Cool.
And just think about the people that used it before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I know when I got my first loom, I had, you know, I called the woman, we became really close friends and she was my loom godmother, you know? And it's so nice to think about, you know, that these tools have been passed down. They've been loved and used and passed down to us. And I think it's a really neat idea.
Yeah, it is cool. I always like that kind of like person to person, real like connection, you know?
Exactly. And then when you got your wheel, did you go and meet the person who had it before?
Yeah. Oh, I picked it up from her house.
And so were you able to make a connection with her too?
Yeah. I mean, like in the moment, you know, I think she was grateful that someone was taking it that was like, you know, very interested in using it because she was like, you know, I want to give it to a person who really cares about it. So,
yeah. That will love it. Yeah. And take care of it. Yeah. It makes us feel better, I think. What challenges do you see as far as what's going on with the fiber shed and how we can fix those things?
You mean like textiles, the textile world, or just like our specific fiber shed?
I think bringing it personal, like our specific fiber shed or even like challenges that you have faced.
I would probably say like, I guess like accessibility, I guess. I don't know. That's like a super broad term, but just I think like I'm someone who can try new things fairly easily. Or at least the things that I'm interested, like I have a wide array of interests and I'm not really afraid to like look stupid or something. Mm-hmm. And so I like trying new things, but there's a lot of people that I feel like could benefit from these things that like wouldn't know how to begin or like wouldn't feel like they belonged or something in this world. Because like the fiber world is very welcoming, but it's also like pretty distinct. Like there's a lot mm-hmm. of people who like this has been their hobby their whole life. And they all like know each other and you know, so
yeah,
it's like it's a little bit of
it can be a little clicky sometimes. You just have to keep pressing through sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say it's like in a bad way, but it can be a little intimidating, I guess. And I think there's also like accessibility in like connecting. I always think like connecting all the resources to the people who like already want to use them, but don't know how to find them.
Right.
And I think that will develop like as our fiber shed gets more established, but like all the yarn shops, like I've been to some other people, like other yarn shops or like other people that are involved in different projects. And I'm like, have you heard of like the fiber shed? And they're like, oh no, I didn't know about that. And so, you know, like connecting everyone together and
right.
and maybe like interfiber shed because there's the one in like New Jersey and then I'm doing I've been involved with the Pennsylvania Flax Project, which is like not its own fiber shed, but it's extremely in line with all of those things. So
right.
you know, we're building a system that doesn't really exist, but like it sort of does. So just the bringing everything together, I think, will be the biggest thing in my mind, at least.
I think you're right. I was talking to Ellen Hawk, and she was talking about how, you know, instead of thinking about having our own regional textiles that goes like from plant to yarn, or goes from wool to yarn or animal to yarn, like thinking about, well, you know, the Pennsylvania Flax Project, they want to get a scutching mill. So maybe we can be using their thing, and then maybe they can be using something that we have, and like maybe widening out so it's not just little affiliates, but that it's like a whole region. And so it's something to think about, but since we all these affiliates kind of overlap, and, you know, to be more collaborative, you know, and cooperative might be helpful for everybody.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's how you get things done. That's like how you make your big dreams happen, is by like connecting to other people who like are like, oh yeah, I have that thing you need, or like, I know the people that you need to talk to, and things like that. I'm finding more and more that like, oh, that's how that happens. You have to expand yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Get out of your comfort zone a little bit. How did your flax go? Is it, have you pulled it up? Is it?
Oh yeah, it went well. I harvested the one that I, little plot that I was growing in July, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I harvested it, and then I redded it, and then I processed it at one of our get-togethers where they have like the hand tools. It turned out well. I did try spinning some of it, and I was like, "Ooh, this is kind of coarse. It's not really something you would want to make clothing out of." And I'm still sort of a newer spinner of linen.
Yeah.
So I'm like not totally sure what I'm doing or like what I could be doing, but I think it was a good test, a good way to understand how the like length of growing the flax really impacts the fineness or the coarseness of the fiber that you get, because I had let mine go a little long. And I'll be very interested to compare, because I was able to take home and rep myself some other flax that I'd harvested with the group that was much earlier. It was like before the flax that I had, the seed pods had kind of like formed seeds that looked viable, which is a little bit farther past what you want for the ideal linen. And then this batch of flax, the seed pods hadn't really formed yet. So I'm hoping that that will turn out to be a lot finer and a lot more like, you know, because there's such a history of people growing their own flax and spinning it and to make like linen, clothing and fabric,
right,
and sheets and things. So I'm like, I always think of that as a reference of like, there has to be a way to do this.
Exactly. And I have never spun linen. But I hear like using water helps. Did you try using water? And
yeah, it helps, because like what I understand about linen is that, or flax and linen, it's like a bast fiber, which means it's like running up and down the stalk of the plant, and it has these pectins that bind it together, and the pectins are kind of gluey, so like if you get them wet, they can kind of sort of glue to themselves a little more, so it helps smooth out the fibers. I don't know how wet they're supposed to be. I don't think it's like soaking, but I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be good to see somebody actually doing it, right? And watching them for a while to see how it goes.
Yeah.
I think with textiles, that's another thing that, you really need to see it being done. It's hard to read about it. And, with a person is good, because then you can ask questions. But even so, I mean, there's so many YouTubes and all that that can show stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom was actually the one who wanted to learn how to knit first. And I kind of like took that over, because she was like, oh, I don't understand this. It's too frustrating. I can't do it. But the book that we were using to try and learn was very, very like confusing. It had like drawings. Where the yarn is supposed to be and where the needles are supposed to be. And we were like, this does not make any sense. And I managed to figure it out from that. But then I was like, I should have just watched a YouTube video. It would have been so much more clear.
Exactly. Because then you can see how somebody, you know, how your hands are supposed to be and where the yarn's supposed to be and all that.
Yeah.
So are you working on a local wardrobe for yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm working on, I was kind of thinking about that I should like, I've kind of been building up all these skills and now I'm like, ooh, I tend to like want to jump from like learning one new thing to the other. And I'm like, I think I really need to pull back and make some like real goals to be like, I want to make this many shirts or like this many socks and things. Mm-hmm. Because I have kind of a problem with like not really liking any of my clothes. I never really have. And I kind of am like a weird size and like the like gendered style. It's like hard for me to buy clothes that are, you know, sold in stores. And now it's like the more that I learn about the textile industry, the less I want to buy from stores. So
exactly.
I want to be able to make my own, but you're saying a local wardrobe. Yeah, I think local, like as much as possible, learning. Yeah, what we were learning from the challenge of like just seeing what's in our local region is that like, oh yeah, we're kind of missing a lot of stuff. Wool is fairly easy to get, especially if you know how to spin. But even if you don't, there are some local mills. But kind of everything else is hard to get.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I do really enjoy natural dyeing. So I tend to dye most of the things that I want to make into clothing, you know. I'm not like exclusive to that. I think the only like kind of rule that I have for myself is like no synthetics, because I don't want to like be like, oh, I really like this, but oh, it has these plastics in it that are going into the watershed and stuff like that. So,
well, I don't think that those will, they don't dye very well. The synthetic stuff, polyester, nylon dyes, but not polyester.
Yeah, which is
without using like really yucky stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cool incentive to use natural dyes.
Yeah. Well, and I decided that because we don't have any linen that's local-ish even, and the cotton is pretty hard to find, or it's kind of too thick for like a clothing thing. Yeah. Like if I can find something that's fair trade or something that is like, I've been finding some nice linen from India, and then yes, I can still natural dye it. It's going to be local-ish, right? As much as it can be.
Yeah. I think that is just as important, because like we are a global society, and also like textile trade has always existed and has a lot of the time been very exploitative. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay to trade from other countries, but doing it in a way that is like not exploitative as much as you can with the knowledge that we have of how these things work. Like that is such a big step.
Yeah.
Because the more that you learn about like the history of textiles is like, wow. Like it's kind of crazy how much textiles, considering it's not as like necessary as food, has been such an exploitative industry.
Yeah.
Forever.
Right. And I think that those corporations are trying to make it like it's better, it's more important than food, right? That you have to have the newest thing.
Yeah.
That the Kardashians are wearing or whatever it is, right? Yeah. So I know that you're working on your sweater. Is there anything else that you're working on now?
Oh, always things I'm working on now. Like I said, I want to dip my toes into hide tanning. I like managed to get this rabbit skin that had been hit by a car and like gutted by vultures. It was like really convenient. I have that in my freezer that I hope to work on, which is like the perfect thing because it's very small.
Yeah.
And I have, I would love to like, this is more of a next year thing, but I would love to weave cloth that I can then sew with. That is like, that would be really cool, because also that means I have to spin it.
Or spin the weft. Don't try spinning the warp.
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
I do have a lot of like cotton warp, but it's hard to find. I say that because I've found it kind of hard to find stuff that is good for like clothing thickness, you know?
Right.
It can be hard to find, especially wool that's like comfortable to the skin, but then also at like a fineness and like a sturdiness that's good for the loom and everything. So
yeah. That's the hard part, I think, is that when you have to have the strength that it needs in the warp is kind of difficult, I think, for a hand spun. It can be done, but it's a little bit more difficult.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I'm up for trying anything.
Okay.
I don't think things are too hard. So
well, you can always start small again. You could make, you know, even if you, you know, make a small band of some kind, right? One of my friends, when in California, she made this most beautiful backpack, and it was all of thin bands that she sewed together, and it was extraordinary. So,
yeah. I think I've seen stuff like that.
Yeah,
very cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I think it's been fun to get to know you a little bit better and hear about all your projects.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's this episode of the Flying Goat Farm podcast. If you enjoyed it, please consider leaving a review. Have a question you'd like me to answer? Send an email to goatherd@flyinggoatfarm.com. And to see our farm and yarn and roving, check out our website at flyinggoatfarm.com. Follow me at Flying Goat Farm on Facebook and Instagram, and I'm Goat Herd on Ravelry. Until next time, happy making.